This is The Reason Interview with Nick Gillespie. Thanks for listening. Please subscribe to this podcast at Apple, Google, Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, wherever you get your podcasts, or just go to reason.com/podcasts and sign up there. My guest today is Cliff Maloney. He's the president of the libertarian student group Young Americans for Liberty, or YAL, and he is hopping mad. Just 3 days before YAL's Mobilize 2020 conference, an event with 1,400 attendees coming in from all over the country, the city of Dallas pulled the plug on the meeting, citing worries about the spread of COVID-19. We'd been working hand in hand with the Omni Hotel, which was our host, and with the city of Dallas, says Maloney, who explains that the group had agreed to abide by a host of conditions insisted on by health officials. That included wearing masks, social distancing, serving box lunches, and other things. Though the group has received a refund from the hotel, Maloney estimates YAL is out around $200,000 for vendor and other non-refundable travel fees and the like. He's especially irked that months ago, he switched the location from Austin to Dallas on the assumption that the latter would be more business friendly and that COVID hospitalizations are now declining in the Dallas metro area. He tells me that the fire marshal had approved all of their plans a week and a half ago, and nothing has changed in the state in terms of new lockdown orders. And he doesn't have any hard evidence for it, but he claims that politics played a role in the last minute cancellation, citing Mayor Eric Johnson's praise for large police reform rallies in the Big D. In a wide-ranging conversation, Maloney tells me about YAL's focus on state-level races in the November election and why he's optimistic about electing a slate of what he calls liberty legislators who will help shrink the size, scope, and spending of government at the state and local levels. That's what YAL focuses on. He's also keen on outreach to younger Americans who are often talked about as socialists in training. Maloney claims that millennials and Gen Z are particularly interested in ending wars and protecting civil liberties. The issues of civil liberties and peace, he tells me, are typically where we get people to open the door for conversation. Here is the Reason interview with Cliff Maloney. Cliff Maloney, thanks for talking with me at Reason here.
Pleasure to be here.
So you guys had your big convention before the 2020 election cycle, which is a pretty big one, not just this year, but in our lifetimes, I suspect. The Mobilize 2020 convention, you were bringing in something like 1,400, mostly student activists to come and talk about all sorts of issues. You had a slate of speakers. You were going to be putting this on in Dallas. What happened?
Yeah, it was pretty interesting, Nick. So we were planning on doing this event August 6th, 7th, and 8th, Thursday, Friday, Saturday event. And the idea is, look, we go out at Young Americans for Liberty, we recruit college students, and then we like to put them into action, right? And this general election is going to be a big effort for us to elect what we call liberty legislators. But what happened was we originally scheduled the event to be in Dallas. And when all the COVID broke, we made the decision to come together and said, listen, Austin was kind of playing these games, if you will, originally to do it in Austin, excuse me. Right. And then the idea would be, we got enough kind of the political back and forth in Austin to say, we need to do a safer place, which we thought would be Dallas. So this was 2 to 3 months ago. We moved the event to Dallas. We have been working hand in hand with the Omni Hotel, which was our host, and with the city of Dallas. And we were thrown a bunch of roadblocks. I mean, there were probably 5 or 6 different things that they forced on us. You had to wear masks. You had to do social distancing. You had to have some temperature checks. We had to do box lunches. We comply with all of it. And Nick, I want to say this. Some of your libertarian listeners might get mad at me for that. But we comply with all of these
things. Yeah. Businesses are going to make certain demands. So you're ready. You're doing that. When did you find out that, and it was the city of Dallas that pulled the plug.
Exactly.
Right?
So on the 3rd, on Monday, we get a call from the hotel saying, hey, we unfortunately have to tell you, although you've worked with the city, although the fire marshal approved all of our plans a week and a half ago, although nothing has changed in the state when it comes to mandates, we are canceling your event. The city is forcing us to cancel your event, calling a force majeure. that because of health reasons, you cannot move forward with your event.
And this is even if I may, from what I've seen, COVID cases, hospitalizations, you name it, were actually trending down over the past week or so.
COVID cases trending down. We're talking about 1,400 people that are 18 to 25 years old. If you want to talk about a group that is not even on the charts when it comes to COVID-19, I mean, that's the group. Mm-hmm. So what's frustrating to us is we comply with everything. We sat down, we came to the table, and we literally had our staging, we had our banners, our pipe and drape, all of our AV equipment. They were at the loading dock at the Omni. So it's hard for us to not see this as being politically biased, whereas the city of Dallas not being fans of Young Americans for Liberty, because why wouldn't they have done this? Why wouldn't they have canceled weeks, if not months ago, rather than wait until we had everything ready to go and then pull the plug?
Well, if you're saying this is politically motivated, and that is what you're saying, right? Why? I mean, so were they stringing you along to screw you over to the maximum effect, or did they get cold feet? And actually, can you say exactly, you know, the city of Dallas called the hotel. Who have you talked to anybody in the city? And, you know, do they have an explanation for, you know, like who canceled the event?
So here are the specifics that we have. The health secretary from the city of Dallas reached out to Omni and said, "We are invoking force majeure. You are not allowed to move forward because of health reasons." We have now requested our lawyers. It's you know, we're keeping everything on the table here. Our lawyers have now requested that the city of Dallas present the exact reasoning and who made the decision. There have also been some FOIA requests that have been filed over the last 24 hours from people that are interested to figure out what exactly happened here. But that's what we're being told, is that the city of Dallas, the health secretary, made the decision, alerted the hotel, and then the hotel came to us and said yes. Now, you asked me if it's political. Let me give you one line on that.
Yes.
The reason I say that is because the mayor of Dallas has legitimately come out and praised some of the protests. Now, look, as a hardcore liberty lover, I'm all for peaceful protests. But what's frustrating to us is we have 1,400 people who are coming to the city willing to comply, that's going to bring $1 million worth of revenue to the city. And the city allows protests to happen, some of these going as long as 40 days. We have a three-day event. It's tough to not look at that and say, why are they allowing some of the violent protests to go on? Or heck, even the peaceful protests, why are they allowing those to go on, but not allowing us to assemble, have our event, and do it with restrictions? That's where we get frustrated.
And you haven't gotten any answers on that.
No, we can't even get, you know, we're still waiting to get an answer in writing on what they did to our event. I mean, and this is what's frustrating. This takes so much work to get 1,400 students. We have 100 elected officials coming in, you know, different speakers from across the country. You know, people think you can just switch cities or switch venues. I mean, we run a pretty tight ship. We like to have solid events. And it's working with government and trying to make that compatible with running an effective event. No, we can't even get an answer on what exactly was the reason they shut us down, let alone, you know, an answer on kind of why they allow some events, but not our events.
So, I mean, you're understandably steamed. Can you talk about how much money are you guys at? What's a dollar amount? You, from what I've read and heard, you're getting a refund from the Omni, from the hotel, but you've paid for people's airfare and accommodations or travel and things like that. How much are you guys stuck for?
Yeah, let me walk you through it because I'm a numbers guy. So the Omni, I will give them credit. They have worked with us every step of the way, and the Omni has issued us a full refund on the things they could refund us. We do offer a $150 stipend for travel. A lot of people that were flying in use that. And so when you total that up, plus the big cost here that people don't see are the vendors. Right, like I mentioned, we had our entire staging, all of our AV. That's not refundable now, right? I mean, they came in, they made the trip. They brought their stuff in from Chicago. You know, they're here. We got staff time to pay for. So when all is said and done, I mean, I'm probably looking at about $200,000. Now, I don't want to put that out there and say that's the final number. We've got to total everything and see what we can get a refund on and what we can't. But that is one of the major reasons I'm steamed, is it's not just the mission of doing the event and the effectiveness of the training and hearing and meeting and networking with all the speakers. It's also the idea that, you know, there's a financial burden here. And if the city would have gave us, gosh, just even an extra 3 days, you would have said this on Friday, I could have easily recovered the $200,000 we're probably going to lose. That's a huge reason for the frustration.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I'm looking at an article from a website called Paper City, which covers Dallas and Fort Worth, and they have a list of events. The Addison Oktoberfest, Taste of Dallas, Salvation Army Women's Auxiliary Fashion Show and Luncheon, Deep Ellum Arts Festival, State Fair of Texas Cottonwood Art Festival. They're in the area and they were all pushed back. They might have been pushed back or they've been canceled, but they had more notice. So it really just came out of the blue for you.
Yeah, and that's what's frustrating. I mean, look, I'm not trying to get other events canceled. I believe people should be able to peaceably assemble, right? That's the tough spot we're in. Mm-hmm. But you're right. Why are other events allowed to happen? And if you're somebody like us, who we have a libertarian streak, we believe in the Constitution, you know, it's tough. I mean, you look at the Dallas mayor, and I don't think they look at us as a friendly group. So I'm trying not to pass judgment, but based on what you said, based on the protests, based on these other events, you know, how do you not think that this is not politically motivated? It's got to be. And it's the students that I really care about. And I don't mean that. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, you have these young college students. They're excited. They're trying to have an outlet to express their ideas, to talk, to meet a lot of their liberty heroes. I mean, you've got Rand Paul coming in. You've got Justin Amash. You've got Thomas Massey. Heck, we've got staff mm-hmm. from Reason. I mean, we've got people from all over the country. They want to meet these people. And that experience is what's frustrating to lose that.
Well, you know, not to try and make a silk's purse out of a sow's ear, but this might be the type of thing that, you know, leaves a pretty dark, deep mark on people, and it might radicalize and activate people more than otherwise.
So I would never say I would root for the government to shut us down, but it has been pretty interesting, Nick. Over the past, you know, it's been about 24 hours now. We have tons of students kind of coming out of the woodwork that said, listen, I was kind of on the fence about the general election door knocking deployment, you know, with our program Operation Win at the Door. I'm all in now. And we've got people signing up. They're interested. I've got investors stepping up saying, this is egregious. We want to support the organization and support this work. You know, we've got people stepping up saying, we want to fund the lawsuit against the city of Dallas. So, you know, it kind of goes to the broader theme of COVID, which I think all of us in the Liberty crowd, you know, COVID has kind of presented this opportunity where there's an audience. People are asking, should the government be able to do X? So in our case, you know, should the government be able to tell us we can't do the event? But in cases like Michigan and somebody's, you know, should the government be able to tell you can't leave your house? Should the government be able to tell you can't work? I think you're right. It's forcing and it's kind of creating some energy that we're going to try to tap into. I mean, I'm launching, like I said, we're focused right now on the fall when it comes to campus. And this deployment October 1 through November 3 to try to turn out and to get as many Liberty legislators elected as humanly possible. And this has given us that extra energy.
Can you briefly describe what goes into anointing somebody or denoting somebody a Liberty legislator? What's the profile? Who are the types of candidates that you guys are supporting?
Yeah, so YAL has supported 107 candidates over the past 2 years. We've won 56 elections. We've endorsed candidates that are Libertarian Party, candidates that are Republican Party, and candidates that are independent. I will share with you, and I'll share with all your viewers, you know, the strategy that has worked, the 56 wins, has been the more Thomas Massey, Rand Paul approach. It's the Liberty Republicans. So this cycle, what we're doing is we're endorsing 150 what we call Liberty candidates who hopefully will win and become Liberty legislators. And I think your viewers will appreciate it.
What are the issues that define them as liberty?
So we have a speech.
And what are the issues that say, okay, they're in, and then what are the issues or the stances where you're like, okay, thanks, pal, but there's the door.
So here's the thing that makes it fun on our end. It's a 6-page survey. Okay, we're not just trying to get them to take a position on like 4 issues and okay, they're good on taxes, they're good on civil liberties, they're good on peace, we'll count them in. Right.
Yeah.
But we do break it down. I mean, we have tons of issues on free markets, tons of things on civil liberties and even peace. These are state officials, but we want to know what is the underpinning? What do they believe? What's their philosophy? So we have 2 rules. They fill out the 6-page survey and we want to find out if they're principled and they're viable. So there's tons of questions on the survey, Nick. You know, if they're in a state where it's fully legalized marijuana and they say, oh, I only support decrim. All right. You're out of here. Mm-hmm. Right. If they think the government should be able to collect our phone records, they think the government should be able to look at our emails. You know, there's tons of things that are what we call, you know, throwaways. If they check that, they're done. But what we want is we want principled, viable Liberty candidates, because it's resource allocation, right? We're trying to build a bench. And my objective is, if I can elect 250 Rand Pauls across the country, I really think there's a systemic change there. So you ask about the candidates. We want people that actually believe in it. They're not just paying lip service to Liberty. And the objective is to finally have a minor leagues or a farm team across the country by the end of 2022.
Are most of the people that you're supporting, are they running at the state level or at the national level, or what's the mix or local?
So we're focused exclusively on state legislative races. Now, don't get me wrong. There are certain things that where we call a double dip. So if you've got somebody like Rand Paul at the top of the ticket, or you have, you know, in a Senate race, or you have somebody like a Thomas Massey or a Justin Amash, if Justin was running, where we'll do a race within their district. We publicly endorse state legislative races, but we're going to try to turn out the vote and double dip for those candidates. But that's the focus, is we're trying to focus at the state level, build a bench, and 52% of people elected to Congress serve in the state legislature. So you start to see them working their way through. But that's not our objective. Our objective is to build the
bench. Can I ask, where does abortion come in on this? Is that an issue that you consider or not?
So two issues we don't take a stance on. I don't like to say we don't take a stance on any social issue, because I've learned, especially even in the libertarian community, if you say the word social, it means very different things than what I assume. Abortion and immigration. And what I mean by that is, you know, look, we really looked at it and said, there's pro-life arguments, there's pro-choice arguments with Liberty folks. On immigration, I think there's a big difference between the build the wall and supporting legal immigration, you know, compared to open borders.
Right.
And so we just made the decision as an organization, look, those are two very split issues amongst the movement. And so we don't take a stance on them. So those are the two that we avoid.
Okay. And when you talk about going and knocking on doors, what do your people do? Are you a 501c3, 501c4, something altogether different? How does
Yeah, so we can't do any political work under our 501c3, but we have both entities. So our 501c3 does most of our campus activities, educating speakers, a lot of the training sessions. The 501c4 predominantly focuses on the political effort. And so if you're a college student, imagine you're 19 years old. We endorse a candidate.
I really can no longer imagine myself as 19, but I appreciate the offer.
I'm trying to give you some credit. So okay. You're 19, you're in college, and you do this. We do month-long deployments. So if it's a primary, obviously earlier in the year, if it's the general, October 1 through November 3. But you'll knock, if you're on the ground for a month, you'll knock roughly 100 doors a day, which is about 3,000 on average across the month. And so the cool thing is, if one of these races comes down to less than, you know, 1,000 votes, I mean, all of our students feel the impact of saying, I made the difference here. Yeah. And so that's one of our secrets to kind of focusing locally at these state races, because it's not a race where there's $150 million spent and, you know, there's hundreds of thousands of people voting. If you're on the ground for 30 days, you can make a real impact.
Who are some of the people you've helped to get into office that you're particularly proud of? Who are they and what have they done that has kind of expanded individual freedom, autonomy, economic liberty, things like that?
Yeah. So I will tell you this. Once we get these people elected, our first priority is that they represent liberty. And then our second priority is that they stop bad bills. And our third priority is that they pass good bills. Right. So I'll share with you, people care about good bills. So I'll jump to that as a third priority. Savannah Maddox in Kentucky, 31 years old. We went in and supported her. She is seen as a firebrand when it comes to liberty legislators. She went into the Kentucky legislature after we knocked about 30,000 doors. She won by 20 points to get herself elected. We completely flooded it. But this is the funny thing, Nick. A lot of these Republicans act like they're principled. And no, I mean, they're in office and they claim to be for less government. But then when it comes time for it, it's a bunch of horseshit.
Right.
Excuse my French.
Yeah.
And so what we find is she went in and she forced a vote on constitutional carry. And the Republicans have always kind of like, oh, well, we can't vote on that. She said, no, we're going to vote. She forced the vote on it, and it's Kentucky, so they can't vote against it.
Right.
So they passed it, and Bevin signed it into law.
Is she in the assembly or in the state senate?
She's in the state house.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. She's a state legislator. Yeah. So she's in the house. She forced it through the house. The senate's been waiting on it. Mm-hmm. They already had it passed, and it went to Bevin's desk, and he signed it.
Right.
She also did the same thing with the campus free speech bill. So we've had, I believe at this point, up to 12 different legislatures where we've had a free speech bill come up. I think we've got reform in 8 of those. So we're pretty excited about that because that directly impacts
what does
our
the what's a campus free speech bill? What does that guarantee?
Yeah. So what it pretty much says is that there's not going to be an advantage for conservatives or libertarians. What it says is that we're going to have a level playing field. So a lot of campuses right now, you see that administrators are trying to silence speakers. They're trying to silence different groups from speaking. And I don't really care about the ideology. What I care about is that we should all have the ability to speak. We believe in more speech. And so these campus free speech bills, just all they do is they kind of reiterate the fact that, listen, campus administrators don't have the ability to dictate what can and can't be heard, mm-hmm. that they need to allow different speech on campus. And it's kind of like a reaffirmation. Yep. But since we've got them passed, I mean, if you see the incidents have completely dropped off in those states, which is what we want. We want more speech.
How are your students feeling, or you know, your student activists about the fall? I mean, because I have a 19-year-old son whose freshman year, the spring semester, was interrupted because his college, like all colleges, shut down and went from in-person classes to Zoom. A lot of colleges now, the Cal State system, I believe, is actually doing all virtual classes at least through January. You know, how are your students dealing with this kind of stuff? And how will you keep an organization going and campaigns going when you can't get together in person?
Yeah, so it's been pretty fascinating for us. So what I'll tell you is this, I would never root for a virus. Let me be clear. But the weird silver lining for us is that with campus being closed down, you know, typically a fall semester, the general election is tough to fill. In 2018, I mean, all the primaries in the summer, that's a piece of cake for us. We've got all these, you know, activists who are excited. But during the semester, you got to find people who are taking online classes or people that have just graduated or people taking a semester off. I don't have that barrier anymore. Yeah. So when we talk about, you know, actual election deployments, it's actually been kind of great because there's no conflict. But you ask about campus. So that is going to be the big challenge for us. Right now, we're projecting about 75% of campuses will not be in person, or there'll be some sort of modification. You know, one of our bread and butter activities is doing street theater, is doing campus activism, right? We're an activist group. Of course, we love the ideas, mm-hmm. and we like to see the ideas in action. So that's something we're working with right now to figure out, how do we adapt? How do we overcome? How do we get this to a point where we can continue to reach people? We're doing a lot of online programming, a lot of online trainings, but that will be a challenge. And I'm happy to say, you know, I think a lot of people try to act like everything's all hunky-dory. No, it's going to be a pain in the rear end. But I'm trying to look at the silver lining of the campaigns as something that'll project us. But we've got to get creative when it comes to reaching people on campus.
So Young Americans for Liberty grew out of Ron Paul's presidential runs, you know, going back 2008, 2012. We are now in a situation where, you know, for the entire 21st century, there has just been runaway spending. But in just the past, 6 months, we have gone absolutely berserk, where I think the month of June had a budget deficit that was what, you know, is in the top 5 or 6 of all time history in dollar amount just for a single month, much less the year. How are you feeling about broad libertarian concerns, particularly about government spending and debt and deficits? I mean, this is as of February or even maybe the beginning of March of this year, it was unimaginable that the government would, you know, essentially double the federal budget for a year, you know, but here we are, and their tax revenues are down, spending is through the roof, and we're not even done yet with, you know, we've got at least $1 trillion more coming directly in COVID aid between now and the end of the fiscal year at the end of September. You know, what is your sense of things, and is this a time where there can be any optimism for a kind of limited government group like Young Americans for Liberty?
So here's my message to every libertarian out there, and even to those that, you know, would call themselves constitutional conservatives. Look, I don't want to say this and get people to be pessimistic or to lose hope, but if you're looking at presidential races and if you're looking at races for federal office, I mean, who cares? And I know people get so worked up because it's these big races and it's sexy and it's on everybody's mind. Yeah. Not that I'd ever say Trump or Biden and use the word sexy.
They are what I'm damn getting, sexy. Yeah. Yes.
I just think so many people, they get so fixated. Yeah. And what we're trying to do, you know, if you ask me for optimism, is play the long game, right? If you're looking for real systemic change, real infrastructure change, and heck, even if you say, Cliff, we've given up on politics, well, so have I. You know, why do you think I'm focused at the state level? We're trying to get microphones for the principles of libertarianism. Mm-hmm. And that's what I try to tell everybody is like, I'm not saying you should totally give up, but if you're really going to try to have a plan, we think that Operation Win at the Door is the first scalable plan for actually getting people who believe in libertarian principles elected, keeping them in office, and building a real minor leagues. So if you're asking me for optimism when it comes to federal races, I don't have the right words. I don't believe there's a way to say that this Congress has any hope of having some sort of sanity when it comes to fiscal issues. What I do think is that if you can get enough people that have a real effort to speak out and really have legitimacy, there's a way to do it. But getting two more people elected to Congress, look, I've got people I'm rooting for this cycle, like Nick Freitas in Virginia, Matt Gertler in Georgia. They're great folks. But at the end of the day, they need reinforcements. We need people that can really speak at all levels. So I think the long game is where the optimism is. And it frustrates me for those that don't see that. You know, I encourage you. Grill me on my plan. You know, talk to me about what we're trying to do, because I think if you try to do anything and expect it to be fixed in the next 2 years, like you said, we just added like $4 trillion to the debt. This is not going to happen by just getting, you know, some of these people to vote right. Yeah. No, we need a systemic realignment when it comes to the principles and the philosophy of these people who get elected.
You know, your group is geared towards younger people. It's in the title, Young Americans. What are the issues that are activating, you know, what are the issues they're citing where they're coming to you and saying, yeah, I want to be a libertarian. I believe in, you know, a strictly limited government and more maximizing individual freedom and autonomy.
Yeah. So hands down, the issue that's the top recruiter for us is war. I don't know how to say that any more clear. I mean, it's the young people, you know, our brothers and sisters, my wife, I mean, she's Air Force. We are the people that are currently, you know, have our age group fighting these forever wars that seem to never end. And I think that, you know, it's a really good jump to, because you can have people from all across the political spectrum. And so when we do campus activism, you know, we always recommend doing, we have a program called Bring Them Home, where we have a wheel that literally spins with, I think, the last 8 countries that we've occupied in the Middle East. And every single one you land on, it's a mock draft. And we kind of talk about why we shouldn't be there, why mm-hmm. we shouldn't be the policeman of the world, why we can't afford to nation build. So I'd argue that war is the number one issue, even for moral reasons. I think you hit people's heartstrings. The left does a very good job at doing this. The right does on some of the social issues, trying to reach social conservatives. But I think as liberty lovers, we need to do a better job at talking to people about, you know, why is it that we believe in peace? Why is it that we don't think people should risk their lives to be policing other nations? And then I'd really get down the list of civil liberties, Nick. Yep. I think you talk about privacy. I think a lot of young people, look, I mean, I don't want to call all the, you know, the Gen Z and the millennials tech savvy, but the reality is, you know, we live in this world where we don't think the government should be looking at our emails. We don't think the government should be looking at our texts. And I think there's a way to connect there. I don't think 90-year-old GOP congressmen that have no idea what they're talking about in committee meetings is the way to connect. But I think that the issues of civil liberties and peace are typically where we get people in to open the door for conversation.
Yeah. How do you feel about, you know, it seems most surveys certainly the loudest voices of, say, people under 40, it seems like they're very comfortable with a larger government, both in terms of spending, in terms of regulation, in terms of kind of running things. And the COVID, you know, lockdowns have, you know, it's both alienated some people, but it seems to have really kind of empowered others to say, you know what, we need a single unified government response. We need the best science and the best, you know, the top men at the pyramid kind of dictating to the rest of us. Do you find that, is that a problem? Or do you find that younger Americans are actually liberty-minded or What are the principles about economics and capitalism that you feel really need to be taught or relearned?
Yeah. So let me ask you this. Where's the leadership been when it comes to promoting a message of limited government that's going to connect with young people? I mean, let's call a spade a spade. Where has the leadership been?
Yeah.
Bernie Sanders has presented his message. AOC has presented her message. I mean, they've figured out ways to reach them. And I'm not just saying, oh, they're on social media. No, I'm saying, look, they have gone out to these communities of younger people and they've engaged with them. There's been leadership. I mean, if you're a young person, who are you looking to that presents free markets that is in the mainstream that you're talking to? And that's not a shot at anybody. We've got a lot of great people we work with. There's a lot of great elected officials that, you know, are making the effort. But I think that's been the problem. Like, and who comes close that is so distorted? Like people like Dan Crenshaw, people like Tom Cotton. I mean, this guy in Missouri wants all of our social media, you know, his entire solution here is to get the government to create some sort of
Talking about Josh Hawley.
Some bureaucrat
here,
to decide
senator from Missouri. Yeah.
Right. Josh Hawley in Missouri that we shouldn't be able to auto scroll on Facebook. I mean, how lost are we when we talk about people who are supposed to present limited government? I mean, this is what's presented.
You know,
that's not the message we stand for. So my only push would be we need new leadership. And I think that's what I'm trying to do is I have a fear of young people that they're not hearing the message. But I don't doubt why. It's because there isn't a great message.
I mean, Young Americans for Liberty, skews Republican. The candidates that you support or push for overwhelmingly are Republican. There's some Libertarians. I don't know if there are any Democrats. But, you know, when you talk about war being anti-war and being pro-civil liberties, that I wouldn't pretend that the Democratic Party is either of those things. In fact, you know, when you look at somebody like Joe Biden, the Democratic presidential candidate, he's awful on these issues, you know, specifically. But it seems like something that could have a appeal in the Democratic Party. Do you see any hope for, I don't know if it's younger people, if it's a generational thing, or if it's an ideological thing where, you know, those two issues that you mentioned, war and civil liberties, starts influencing a broader group of people? Or are you going to be stuck with conservative Republicans who say, yeah, we like capitalism, except when it's Facebook, Amazon, Apple, Google, or anybody that we think is screwing us, and then we want to take them over or break them up? I mean, do you see anything shifting in the near future?
No, I definitely do. And I think, I look at parties as a vehicle, right? I mean, I don't look at parties. I always say if you're building around a candidate who believes in liberty, that's great. If you're building around a party, you know, you're wasting your time. And I'll say that about the Libertarian Party. Mm-hmm. I'm not a fan of building parties. I don't think that parties, I think they're vessels. And you should use those vessels or those vehicles to advance an idea. Do I see the paradigm shifting? Yeah, I mean, what's the number? Like 40% of people don't identify with either of the major parties. Maybe it's 30%, but it's growing at a rapid rate.
It's, I believe the last time I checked, it was in the 40s, and it was a plurality of voters. Yeah.
Yeah, and so I think, does that mean that they're all supporting some third idea? No, I don't think that. But I think this idea that Republicans want to take over government so that they can push their beliefs, Democrats want to take over government so they can push their beliefs, and we're presenting a new way, which says, look, we want to actually take over less government. We want less government in your lives. And I really do think, I mean, I know with COVID, it's tough because the initial reaction was, you know, government needs to take action. But if there's ever a wake-up call, if there's ever a test for Americans, how is this not it? How is this not the moment where people start to think, you know, maybe the government shouldn't have such a predominant role in our lives? And I just think that's the opportunity we have, and we have to try to capture it.
Just as a final question, where's the best place for people to find out information about Young Americans for Liberty?
Yeah, check us out at yaliberty.org and on all social media pages at yaliberty. If people want to door knock, if people want to run for office, and if people want to invest, we're always looking to get people involved and try to build this minor leagues team.
All right. Well, hopefully you'll get called up to the majors very quickly, maybe in November or shortly thereafter. Cliff Maloney, president of Young Americans for Liberty. Thanks so much for talking to the Reason interview with Nick Gillespie.
Thanks, Nick. Appreciate it as always.
This has been the Reason Interview with Nick Gillespie. Please subscribe to us at Apple, Google, Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, wherever you get your podcasts, or go to reason.com/podcasts, and you can subscribe there and check out the Reason Roundtable, a weekly recap or look forward at the news, as well as the Soho Forum debates. Thanks for listening.